You're listening to The Exchange on Siouxland Public Media. I'm Mary Hartnett. After many delays, Congress has finally passed a $19.1 billion disaster aid package with help for communities nationwide, including many in Iowa that are recovering from floods and other disasters. President Trump, who initially opposed that bill, freezing its progress in the Senate, now says he'll sign it, although it includes $900 million for Puerto Rico's recovery efforts from hurricanes in 2017 that he didn't want, and it doesn't include the $4.5 billion he requested in supplemental aid for the southwestern border. Iowa Republican Senator Chuck Grassley says some on-farm losses not automatically covered by disaster aid now will be eligible. Grassley says the Department of Agriculture will be working out details. Flooding ruined many bushels of corn and soybeans farmers were holding on to in hopes of fetching a better price than they could get at harvest time. Governor Kim Reynolds says she's grateful the U.S. Congress has finally approved the disaster aid package that includes money for Iowa communities affected by that flooding. Floodwaters devastated western Iowa in mid-March, and floods have been affecting more and more of the state since then. Reynolds says officials haven't been able to get a complete damage assessment yet. Reynolds says she'll ask President Trump, when he visits Iowa next week, to reopen the presidential disaster declaration to include more counties. The recent floods and tornadoes in Iowa have left many people displaced or having to deal with major repairs. The Federal Emergency Management Agency has been in Iowa, Nebraska, and South Dakota helping residents since the floods of mid-March. They're still in town this week at the Lowe's store on Sunnybrook Road. Andy Mathis is a FEMA worker who answers questions for those who are dealing with disasters, large and small. Have you had a lot of people coming up to you here since you've been here?
Yes, we average between 50 and 70 people that come in a day. This is our second week here. We will be here through Saturday, whatever date that is. But we'll be here through Saturday, and then we'll probably be moving on to another location, another store, as like Lowe's, to give out more information. We have free publications here to help offer information and preparation and mitigate. We deal with mitigation, which is basically preparation for what may happen in the future. And we have information on mold and mildew, taking shelter from the storm. We have NFIP information, which is the National Flood Insurance Program. And you're welcome to come by here at the Lowe's in Sioux City. And we'll be happy to give you anything that we can. And it's all free to the public.
Are a lot of people coming in here still talking about the recent floods and what to do about some of the problems they've had since then?
Yes, not so much about flooding necessarily. Most people here have said that they have maybe a couple inches in their basements, but to have restoration done and ripping drywall out if you have a finished basement, it can help to get some of the information from us about mold and mildew, and some of that is dealing with, you know, bleach and water as well as vinegar and water. But as far as flooding, it wasn't as bad as what we thought here in Sioux City. Further south is much worse. So I don't know how much longer the FEMA concern will be in this area. There is a phone number that you can reach us at if you need to apply for information. It's 1-800-621-3362, or you can go to www.disasterassistance.gov. The deadline is July 1st.
And on the sheet, it talks a little bit about being prepared for tornadoes. We've seen quite a few tornadoes in the past week and a half here. Do you find that people sometimes really just don't know what to do? I remember when I was a kid growing up here, it was almost like, you know, boilerplate. Everybody said, go to the basement to do this, do that. Are people informed about where to go and what to do?
Yes, in the basement, especially in a corner, is the best place to be. And if you don't have a safe room, and if you don't have a basement, it would be into a load-bearing doorway or into a bathroom that is surrounded by load-bearing walls. If you do have a basement and you don't have a safe room, the easiest way is to block off two more walls and make it a safe room. And when it's not tornado season or when it's not the weathering time of year, You can use it as a pantry. So that's the best thing we can tell them right now.
What are the more common things people ask you about? You talked about flooding, about, you know, trying to deal with mold and mud that gets into homes. What are some of the issues people are concerned about?
They're concerned with why they're asked to have flood insurance, even though they don't consider that they're in a flood zone. Everyone is in a flood zone. It just depends on which zone that you're in. The best thing to do is to... There's a number here. This is for the NFIP. The number is 1-800-427-4661. And all they have to do is give their address, and they will be told what zone that they're in. And it's not a private insurance company, so they're not going to be trying to be sold anything. It's just they will be given a rate for the year. And usually in this area, the zones are either Zone A or Zone X. That's usual around here. And if that's the case, it's about $450 for the year. And that includes not just Mother Nature flooding. If your washer breaks or your dishwasher breaks or a pipe breaks in your house, that is covered as well.
What is the difference between Zone A and Zone X?
It just depends on the height of where you are and the history of what has happened in your area. So it's a meteorologic situation that I can't explain, but A and X are basically the lowest levels of a zone that you could be in as far as, you know, being frustrated with what may happen to your house, because most people live on hills, what have you, in this area. So
is there anything you think people really need to know?
To be prepared, that's what mitigation is. So if you can have dry goods for if something does happen to your house. And again, the NFIP, even though you don't think you're in a flood zone, you are. And if something else does happen, it's not going to be good when if you don't have it and something does happen to your place. So, you know, it doesn't happen until it happens. And then when it does, just be prepared. You might think it's overblown, but it's worth having that safety and, you know, not being stressed out about what may happen, or when it does happen, then it's, you know, it's not going to affect you as much.
That was Andy Mathis, a community education and outreach specialist for the Federal Emergency Management Agency at the Lowe's store in Sioux City. He's there for the rest of this week, offering advice for those affected by floods, tornadoes, and other disasters. Up until this week, dismal weather conditions with heavy rain and cooler days prevented many Siouxland farmers from finishing their planting season. Siouxland Public Media's Sheila Brummer reports it's a critical time for producers to get into the fields.
22.5-acre field, and there's about 5 acres of it completely underwater.
Mark Held stands by his farmland 2 miles south of Hinton along Highway 75 in Plymouth County, Iowa. Can't miss it. Instead of dry land, it looks like waterfront property.
We call it the pond.
A body of water at least knee deep.
I live right along the Floyd River, and so last September, we had the Floyd River flooded, and then that washed all your bean crop away. You couldn't harvest your beans, and it took you forever to get out there and get your corn out.
The corn and soybeans still submerged. The standing water never let up with a wet spring and flooding again in March.
Mother Nature's kind of reacting a little hard on me now.
Held Farms, 800 acres, spanning to the outskirts of nearby Sioux City.
And majority of it's pasture, but then it's corn and bean and oats and alfalfa.
And Held still needs to get his crops in the ground.
I have 40 acres of corn to do yet, and about 150 acres of beans to put in, and it's just kind of a headache.
Held isn't alone. Others in the area lag behind in their planting.
Weather conditions, they seem to be pretty bleak for farmers right now. Well, in a normal time period, we average about 4 days a week in the field of getting some field work done during the month of last half of April and through much of the month of May, even closer to 5 days a week. We've been maybe averaging 1 day a week almost since early April, so it's been really tough in getting a lot of that work done.
Joel DeYoung is an agronomist with Iowa State University Extension. He oversees 9 counties in northwest Iowa. DeYoung says the most recent crop report shows the region with 60% of corn in the ground and about a third of soybeans.
The state of Iowa is actually up to 76% reported planted on the corn side. And so, you know, 3/4 of the corn done is wonderful. It's still about 2 weeks behind what we would normally have done at this stage of the game. We get through the end of May, on average year, we're definitely done with probably 99% of the corn. So we're really lagging significantly on those acres.
Farmers also face stress over crop insurance requirements. The deadline for many to plant corn came at the end of the month.
After May 31st, there are some late planting discounts, you could say. So if it's June 5th before you get it planted, you'll only get 95% of that coverage. But you still have to pay the same premium because of the late planting date. So that's true for corn, and there's a 25-day late planting window. And after that, the coverage drops really dramatically after that point in time.
The deadline for soybeans is June 15th. Have you ever seen conditions like this before?
Well, I've been working for Iowa State University Extension, oh, I think it's 37-plus years now, so I've been around for a little while. I honestly remember some years where we've been really wet in the spring, but typically it's not nearly as widespread as what we're seeing across the Midwest.
Do you plan on staying in farming if things continue this way?
I'm going to turn 65 in July, and I plan on retiring next year, and because that's all I've ever done is farm. It's not fun anymore. Costs so much to do it for what you get out of it. You do make a little bit of money.
Mark Held also plans to fight nature by embracing nature.
I'm trying to get it into the wetland CRP program, whereas I don't have to farm it again. But I can't even get into the gate to get the CRP put in. That has to be at the end of June.
He also hopes for a stretch of warmer, dry weather.
You know, balls to the wall, they always say. Got to get it done while the sun shines.
Near Hinton, Iowa, Sheila Brummer, Siouxland Public Media News.
My sunshine. My only sunshine, you make me happy when skies are gray. You'll never know, dear, how much I love you.
You're listening to The Exchange on Siouxland Public Media. I'm Mary Hartnett. Well, summer break is finally here for students in the Siouxland Community School District. Last week also marked the end of an era for one elementary school building, as Siouxland Public Media's Sheila Brummer explains.
Fifth grade teacher Josh Steinhoff packed up his classroom at Hunt Elementary on Thursday, a final few moments in a classroom where he spent 9 years.
It's difficult. It's something that's been here for so long. Moving forward, it's going to make everything different here, but I'm sure we'll see a lot of positive changes from it as well.
Students left the day before, linking hands and hugging the longtime learning center under the watch of Principal Cammie Barker, who says it was a day of mixed emotions.
It was exciting and sad. I think it was very bittersweet for the staff, students, and the community. The kids were excited for summer to start, but also sad to see the building go.
The old Hunt Elementary serves students near 20th and Nebraska in the heart of Sioux City since 1906. If you do the math, that's 113 years.
I think there's some really cool pieces, the murals that are built into the walls that we actually had the district came and took out today. They drilled out around them so that we can use that in our new building. This is a building that many of our staff members have worked in for years, but they're also very excited for our students to have a new facility to call home.
The new school is expected to open in the fall of 2022.
One big thing is we're not handicap accessible. The structure is, it's very worn. We don't have the technology that the other schools do. And the wiring, even. We're not an air-conditioned site, so there's days that we have to let out early. I think it'll just improve the learning conditions for the students. I think our students truly deserve that.
Principal Barker says a new facility will hold about 200 more students than the 340 who attended Hunt this past school year.
I've never worked with a staff that cares so much about kids. The staff members that are here truly are here because they love this community.
Students at Hunt Elementary will go to Crescent Park until their school's ready to go. However, teacher Josh Steinhoff won't be there, at least not at first. He's taking a year-long leave.
To pursue a master's degree in physical education.
Steinhoff hopes to return to Hunt as a PE teacher and potentially a coach at North Middle and North High, two feeder schools for Hunt.
Have a strong desire to see Hunt students succeed and excel in life.
And for those passionate about education, Hunt Elementary transcends physical walls. For Siouxland Public Media News, I'm Sheila Brummer.
And this past weekend, graduation ceremonies took place for all three high schools in the Sioux City Community School District. Students received diplomas in a class showcasing lingual diversity, as Siouxland Public Media's Sheila Brummer reports.
Jose Garcia graduated from North High School and can't wait for the future.
I plan on going 2 years to Western Iowa Tech and then transferring, probably USD or Briarcliff.
And what did you think about your high school years going to school in Sioux City?
They definitely went by fast.
The 18-year-old received a new recognition from the Sioux City Community School District. He received a seal of biliteracy, earned by students who are proficient in English and one or more languages. In all, about 30 students were the first to receive the seal of biliteracy.
We started in Irving Elementary as the first class to be in a bilingual program. Half the classes were taught in Spanish and the other half in English.
Jose, who was born in Garden City, Kansas, entered school in Sioux City with limited English, but quickly caught on.
I came here when I was 4 years old, so I knew mainly Spanish, but I got enrolled in that program and then just watching TV, to be honest. I'd say I picked up a lot of my English.
Out of the almost 900 graduates in the Sioux City Community School District's class of 2019, 104 are English language or EL learners. About 82% of the EL students speak Spanish as their native language.
How many languages do students
well,
in the district
speak? I believe that it's 43, but it could be changing frequently because we have different dialects that come on a regular basis.
Tori Albright is the World Language Coordinator for the school district.
Language acquisition is so complex. It's one of the most complex topics to talk about in research. Some of our students who come to us are coming from educated backgrounds. So they're coming from a country that they've been to school and they've been lucky enough to have a formal schooling background. And maybe they're younger when they're coming to us, so they're 10 or 11. And then we have some students that come to us and they're 16, 17, 18, 19 years old, and they have limited what's called SLIFE students, or limited formal background or formal education. And so they're coming to us in high school and they have a huge gap in instruction. And so we're having to meet the needs of that gap in instruction. So that's kind of one of the biggest challenges at the secondary that we face. And at the elementary level, I would just say the biggest challenge that we face is just meeting the diverse needs of students that come to us from a variety of backgrounds and from different countries and different languages and different pathways. I mean, no one immigrant family takes the same pathway to come into our city, into our country. So we can't, there's no like one size fits all that meets the needs of all of our learners.
Immigration is such a hot topic here in the United States and in Northwest Iowa. There are some people who feel like, you know, some immigrants shouldn't be here. What would you like people to know about the students that come here as immigrants?
I mean, it's a humanity issue, I think. And people are people. And I'm very, very, very proud of Siouxland at large and Sioux City Community Schools because we do an excellent job welcoming in every single family that walks through our doors, no matter what their background are. You know, I joke that we haven't put up the no vacancy sign, but we never will because we are a public school district that opens its arms, and we have signs with the 9 top languages that say, no matter where you're from, we're glad you are a neighbor. And it's listed in the 9 top languages that we have, so that the very first thing that our families see when they come in is, we are so happy that you are here. No matter the pathway that you took to get here, we're glad that you live in Siouxland and that you call Siouxland home.
Jalisco.
Jose says his family migrated from Mexico many years ago for a better life. His parents worked hard to provide for their three children and strive to learn the language, his father picking it up easier than his mother.
She's gone to a lot, taking a lot of like English classes, but I can tell it's like a lot harder to learn it at an older age than it would be starting from kindergarten or so on.
Jose says he doesn't want to stop with just two languages. Eventually, he wants to learn how to speak Chinese and Japanese.
I want to study business and in order to be a lot more helpful, I can reach out to more people.
Jose Garcia, a young man full of hope and determination, ready to embrace the world with a deep multi-educational foundation. For Siouxland Public Media News, I'm Sheila Brummer.
Jose Garcia was also chosen to greet parents at the beginning of the graduation ceremony at the Tyson Event Center Saturday in his native language of Spanish. You're listening to The Exchange. I'm Mary Hartnett. While summer's finally here, the time for all kinds of outdoor festivals, the Lewis and Clark Festival takes place at Lewis and Clark State Park near Ottawa this Friday, June 7th through Sunday, the 9th. The event celebrates early American heritage and transports people back to the early 1800s. One of the characters bringing this history back to life shared insights on the art of buckskinning with Siouxland Public Media.
My name is Richard Rose, and what I demonstrate at the Lewis and Clark Festival in Ottawa, Iowa, is brain tanning buckskin, which was the Native American way that they tanned hides, and also the method that was adopted by Lewis and Clark's men to tan the hides of the deer, elk, and buffalo as they made their way on the expedition up the Missouri. They also adopted the brain tanning method to tan hides. The process is basically, if you have the hide off of the animal, the first thing you want to do is completely remove all of the flesh and the meats and the fats as much as possible. You get all the flesh off, and sometimes if you lightly coat it with salt, you can usually save it from insects and from the bacteria from taking effect. If you're able to work on the hide after that, generally what I do is I stretch my hides out on a frame to get them good and taut. After they dry, I scrape the hair off of the hide with the epidermis with it. So then the brain solution that I add to the hides will soak into the fibers of the hides and basically cure the fibers of the hides with the brain's fats and oils that are in the brains. Lewis and Clark's men used the brains of the animals they killed, either the deer, buffalo. There is, in Sergeant Ordonez's journal, I don't remember the date, there was two men on the expedition that were 30 miles away from the rest of the encampment. And they killed two buffalo, and in Sergeant Ordonez's journal, he put that those men saved the tongues and the brains to tan hides with. So being that far away, they didn't bring the meat back that far. They just brought back the delicacy, which was the tongue, buffalo tongue, and the brains. So that tells me that brains were very, very important to this expedition on tanning the hides. Once I get the brains worked in well, where after the hide dries and in between sanding and applications, I can basically take the hide and put it in lukewarm water. That way it'll go back to its original thickness. And then I will wring the hide out, and the process after that is I add an extra step when I do mine, is I usually take another amount of brain solution and immerse the hide completely in that. And then I will take that out after it has been immersed for a while, wring it out, re-put it in, soak it back up, wring it out again. I will do this probably, depending on the size of hide, 3 to 5 times. Generally, if I put a hide into the solution and it acts just like a sponge, it just brings, then I know that I have enough fiber absorption that I can start the final process of rubbing the hide on a rope. And the most aggressive, important part of this process is rubbing that hide dry. And usually rubbing it back and forth over a rope is in a process that is nice if you have more than one person. Personally, when I do it, I have the modern convenience of being able to wrap it up and put it in a deep freeze. Back then, they did not. Generally, I believe a lot of the hide tanning work done by the women was done in teams. So this way, when one woman was tired, there would be several women that could take on and do the process. Generally, I believe a lot of their working the hides was done in a group. Okay, the final step is after this hide is rubbed dry and completely soft, it must be smoked. And it's very important, the smoking process, is that you smoke it enough that basically the fibers of the hide is coated with the resins and the pitch that's in the smoke. The reason you're doing this is that if this hide ever got wet, it would dry soft again. Otherwise, it would just become a piece of raw hide. I've always been interested in hide tanning. I used to work in a hide plant in Denison, Iowa years ago. I've been interested entirely about, 19th century America. I've always had a fascination for local history. I don't think was very well kept. I've tried to study as much as I can, everything I can get a hold of local histories. I did find there was a lot of, you got to separate the yarns and the myths and the stories from the facts. And a lot of times that's very hard to do, but I tried to do that as much as possible. I think back at that time period, you had a lot of perils. You had, no cures for diseases that we have now. But I also think that some of the problems that we just deal with today are very petty compared to what people had for problems back at that time. I don't try to romanticize the time period, but I've always had a lifelong interest in the time period. I've always had people tell me I should have been born 150 years before I was, but that's because I just immersed myself so much into it. I try to think that I could actually, in my lifetime, live several other lifetimes by doing this reenactment process. You get to understand history is a puzzle that basically so many people don't understand unless they understand the history behind it. Once they sit there and look at something, if they know the history of why that is, I can tell them why that is. Sometimes it bores people, sometimes they don't want to hear it, and other people are just fascinated by it.
Richard Rose from Dunlap, Iowa, is an expert in the Native American art of brain tanning. Rose is a reenactor who's passionate about sharing his knowledge of history for anyone who would like to listen. Siouxland Public Media's Sheila Brummer recorded and photographed Rose at the Dow House in Dow City, Iowa. And you can see pictures of Rose and the Dow House at our website at kwit.org. Sometimes we forget how old this land really is and how many peoples have lived here along the banks of the river we call the Missouri. We forget even when we take action to remember. Jim Scopp tells the story of a trail that had been known for millennia, celebrated not so long ago, forgotten, and just recently refound.
Missouri River Trail. The Boy Scouts were there to lead the assembly in the Pledge of Allegiance. And the school band from Central High offered some fitting selections. Sioux City Journal claims there were 300 folks in attendance at the dedication that Sunday afternoon, a goodly crowd of citizenry. It was 1929. The whole enterprise, the dedication of a brass plaque on a monument marking the old Missouri River Trail, was undertaken by the local Martha Washington chapter of the Daughters of the American Revolution. It was a community-wide event. Everyone was welcome to celebrate the history of the region, a time long before white men came north up the river or west from across the state. Two great-granddaughters of pioneer Sioux City families had the distinguished honor of unveiling the monument. Sioux City celebrated its own history. 1929, the city's western hills still wore the visible memory of that ancient trail. A passage up and through tall grass prairie that ran over the river's massive shoulders, a roadway laid down there by innumerable moccasins and hundreds, maybe thousands, of travois pulled along by dogs and horses. Sioux City's old Missouri River Trail was more ancient than anything left behind by the Corps of Discovery, centuries older than Sergeant Floyd's grave. Once upon a time, it was a thoroughfare for First Nations from the entire region, Omaha and Yankton, Osage, Iowa, all of whom at one time or another had moved north or south beside the Missouri. And part of that long trail was right here. You could still see it on Sunday, May 26, 1929, when people climbed the hill close to what was then War Eagle Park and circled up around a large granite boulder of irregular shape, being 6 feet through at the widest part. Or so that stone was described in that year's DAR minutes. A boulder that's still there today. And now, the big story. The plaque, the stone, the celebration, that trail, the Missouri River Trail, were totally forgotten. Not by a few, but by all. The whole event and what it celebrated, the ancient storied thoroughfare through Sioux City's hills, the whole business was gone from the city's collective memory until Marta Nelson, vice regent of today's DAR, happened to page through the old minutes and discovered a program dated May 26, 1929, for a dedication neither she nor anyone else had ever heard of, something called the Missouri River Trail. Through almost endless detective work and with the help of the city's most dedicated historians, all of that story, save the trail itself, came slowly back into focus. The hunt began. A note went out in the paper, and just a day later, someone responded. Someone who thought he walked past that big old stone daily when he walked his dog. Didn't know for sure if it was the same one, but it was an anomaly where it sat, way up on the hill all alone. No plaque on it, though, he said, at least nothing he'd ever seen. That stone wasn't hard to find. And there on its northern side were four drilled holes that matched the exact size of the plaque the committee had created for the 1929 commemoration. You can find it yourself if you'd like. Just follow the gravel path off the road to the War Eagle Monument. There's a sign. In truth, that big rock is not much to see, but the drilled holes are clearly visible. It's in the woods. Woods that wouldn't have been there 200 years ago when prairie fires had a mean habit of burning down pretty much everything in sight. Try as I might, when I was out there, I couldn't see a path or trail through the trees. But don't let that stop you. That stone is well off the beaten path. Likely as not, you'll be alone if you go out there. Just stand there for a while and imagine. Think of a processional of native people, whole families coming up through the trees, smiling and laughing, occasional whinny or nicker from all those splendid horses. Maybe a dog will bark, don't mind him. A whole troop, dozens, maybe 50 men and women, old and young, probably on their way to a hunt. Just watch. Stand there at the rock marking the spot. Just stand there and listen to them in the silence.
Support for Small Wonders on Siouxland Public Media comes from the Daniels Osborne Law Firm in the Ho-Chunk Center in downtown Sioux City, serving the needs of clients in real estate transactions, business formation and guidance, and personal estate planning. More information is available on Facebook or at danielsosborne.com. And a long-abandoned stone monument to that trail in War Eagle Park will be dedicated this Sunday afternoon with a little help from the Sioux City Parks and Recreation Department. The city has cleared an access path to the old Missouri River Trail monument, a small gray boulder in a thicket on the eastern side of War Eagle Park. The Sioux City Daughters of the American Revolution built the monument in the late 1920s to commemorate the trail, which had been used by local Native Americans since at least the 19th century. Though the trail was once well known among locals, the trail and the stone marker were forgotten, as we've heard, in the 20th century. And Michael O'Connor will also be part of the dedication of the trail. Michael is a member of the Ottawa Sioux tribe who has adopted War Eagle Park, and he's made it his mission to haul away trash and keep the place pristine. O'Connor says he wants to honor all those who have lived and died at the park, including people, animals, and trees.
A change happens. And so we, as two-legged people, as human beings, we sort of limit that experience to, hey, I'm different. You know, I feel really good now, like after we leave church or after we've had special time with somebody special, we feel different. But we know that that other person also feels different. So in our Dakota way, in our Native American way, we know that the trees have that type of energy too. The animals have that type of energy too. They have souls, they have spirits. And so you literally become one on a very literal basis with the park. and with the spirit that resides there, because there are people that are buried up in that area. And because of that, a lot of prayers have been set up there. And so you're connecting with not only the moment and all those relatives, but you're also connecting with the past and you're connecting with the future, all in one. And so you carry that energy while you're there, and then you carry that energy with you when you leave. And you can, that place is very accessible. You can always go back for that. And that's what I was there this morning for. Somebody specifically requested to meet me out there to say a prayer. And of course, I went out there and I picked up garbage because there was garbage there. And I saw law. I was happy to see law enforcement leaving because we get a lot of people that illegally dump things out there. So they're desecrating a real sacred place. Just imagine if somebody was illegally dumping, like, say, a Memorial Park Cemetery or any other place. And I know they don't know that. So Grandmother Earth forgives them because they don't know that. But that's really what's happening. It's a very powerful place. And so that's why I was up there just this morning, because somebody asked me to come up there and pray with them. And so it's a strong, powerful experience if you want to be accessible to that. And so all you have to do when you go there is make yourself accessible to it and understand that this is an important place in the history of Sioux City, in the history of the people, and not just two-legged people, but all the other people that I just described. And if you can just understand that and acknowledge that, then that power source that resides there will join with that, and it'll change you. And so that's really what I go about, is I pick up garbage, but while I'm doing that, I know that I'm being helped.
You've really spent a lot of time out there though recently, haven't you, trying to get ready for the anniversary and for the dedication ceremony that will be happening this Sunday, right?
Because of this anniversary coming up, I've just made extra efforts. And so far this year, just in the last month, so there's been some people that have blessed us by coming along, but for the most part, it's been me. And we've removed 14 just very large bags of beer cans and beer bottles from that park. And for me, that is an ongoing effort. I promised the park that I wouldn't stop until absolutely every single beer can and beer bottle is clear of that park. And I still have several weekends to go, but I made that promise to that hill and to that area and to that land that that's what I would do, and that's what I have been doing. And it's been very powerful. It's been very powerful. And I see while I'm there, there's families that come up there from out of state. There's families that come up there from this area. And so I see them there, and they're there for a purpose. And so I think that it's very important that the park remain free of all that litter, all that, and for the reason that's what I've just described, because I know that because of all the garbage and all the beer cans and all the partying that goes on up there, that the sort of extra sensory within us and within the animals feels that. And so I believe in our own traditional way of thinking and just human spirit thinking, is that once that area is clear of all that, that the more animals will feel safe enough to come within that park. Part of that is because of the interstate, but it's a very sacred place, not because of who is there and who has been there, but because of the confluence of the Missouri and the Big Sioux River, because they meet. And a long time ago, that was the highway. And so friendships, that park has a history of relationships, a history of friendships. And so that is there. That spirit is accessible there. And I think that's why people are drawn there. And I think that's why that park changes people. And so I want to make that, I don't want families to come up there and learn the history of our area about friendships and about barriers, overcoming barriers of friendships, and then see a beer can over there or a needle, a hypothermic needle that is more than likely being used for drugs.
I think it's really great that you're part of this, and it's this wonderful joint effort.
Absolutely.
What are you going to do? Are you going to be saying some prayers? Are you going to be speaking?
I've been asked to pray. And so what I'll do is I'll make sure that there's sage there for everybody to have that experience. And I'll probably explain. There's a very deep meaning to this relationship with sage. But the sage is very powerful. It's very purposeful. It's supposed to be there. And so I won't go into that story, but we'll have that accessible so they can have, so the people that come can have that experience. And I'll probably explain to them why the sage is there. And when I do explain that to them, they'll then understand the depth of that ceremony. And then I'll say a prayer. I've been asked to say a prayer, and I'll probably sing a prayer song, which will unite, again, it'll unite the history of that park, and it'll unite all the prayers that have been said there, both in the future, in the past, and at the moment.
I think it's really telling that this ceremony isn't just about the Daughters of the Revolution and their historical efforts. It's not just about the Native Americans. It's about people in this community who share this place.
Yes, absolutely. And that's what War Eagle Park is, and that's what that monument is. It celebrates and it acknowledges the beginning of the relationships and friendships of our community that started a long time ago and continue forward today. So I love the fact that it is not only a historical gesture, but also one that I believe is going to continue to create those relationships. That's because of that park has its own spirit that is different from every other park in our community. And so I think that this effort is going to strengthen our community because of that.
Do you have any recordings of you like praying or singing?
No, I don't have any recordings because everybody has their own way of doing things, and I'm not unusual. I'm from the Ihonkawan Oyate. I'm Yankton Sioux, and so it's not unusual for us to know songs, to do these things. This is the way that we are, and this is the way that we are have always been. So this isn't unusual for us. This is every day for us. This is how we live. And so for recording, no, it's not that I don't believe in recording. I think it's, I just love the fact that you ask that. I don't have a voice for that, but it's just like when you go to church and you're singing gospel songs, you don't need to have that type of voice. It transcends the descriptive narrative of what is beautiful. It comes from spirit. The songs come from spirit, and they're expressed from that spirit. This is what I say usually when I pray, because I start out by acknowledging all of creation, and then I also speak in English. So what I say is usually, Ate wakantika date topa unshimaka ampe tukile wopilan keapalo tunkashla le iapiayo. So what I'm saying is I'm acknowledging all of creation, and I'm saying thank you, and I'm saying help us. And so that in itself is a very brief prayer, but it's a very powerful prayer. Then I usually will pray in English for the others that don't understand that. And then I will usually sing and bring a drum and sing a traditional Dakota or Lakota song. So, and it's very powerful, and I think that's what we'll be doing on the 9th.
That was Michael O'Connor. He'll be part of the dedication of that trail Sunday afternoon at 3 at War Eagle Park. Michael is a member of the Ontawana Sioux Tribe. Well, finally, today it was announced this morning that rapper Flo Rida and blues rocker George Thorogood will headline the 29th annual Saturday in the Park on July 6th. The free music festival at Sioux City's Grandview Park will also feature indie rockers Liz Phair, soul and rock artist Colm Brio, and the country duo Michigan Rattlers. In the past, headliners were usually announced by April, but organizers say that booking top acts this year was more difficult because of the proximity of the festival to the 4th of July and the decision by some artists either to take that time off or to perform in Europe. Flo Rida is best known for his 2008 breakout single, Low, which was a number one hit on U.S. charts for 10 weeks, and it broke the record for digital download sales at the time of its release. And Liz Phair, who'll also appear, was a breakout indie rock artist in the 2000s with hits like Why Can't I?
Get a load of me, get a load of you, walking down the street and I hardly know you. It's just like we were meant to be, holding hands with you.
And George Thorogood and the Destroyers rose to fame in the early 1980s with the bluesy rock hit Bad to the Bone.
Now on the day I was born, the nurses all gathered round and they gazed in wide wonder at the joy they had found. The head nurse spoke up, so leave this one alone. She could tell right away that I was bad to the bone. Bad to the bone.
The lineup for the Abe stage, known for its proximity to the statue of Abraham Lincoln at Grandview Park, was announced earlier. And that lineup includes reggae singer, rapper, and beatboxer Matthew Paul Miller, and Claudia Alexandria Feliciano, a San Jose rapper who goes by the name of Snow the Product. Other Abe stage performers include True Feels, Arson City, Artificial Stars, Brady Rap, Psychedelic Sidekick, Gallivant, Winter Wayfarer, and the Sioux City Conservatory of Music. The Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Sioux City is again the title sponsor for this year's festival, and Saturday in the Park is set for Saturday, July 6th. And that's it for The Exchange. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Mary Hartnett. Thanks also to Sheila Brummer. And on the way out of the show, we'll hear more from George Thorogood, who you'll be able to see at Saturday in the Park. Here's Move It On Over.
I come in last night about 10:30. That baby of mine wouldn't let me in.